Hello everyone, welcome to another podcast session by the Kenyan Wall Street and HISA team. Today, just as usual, every Monday, we always looking at markets, how markets have performed, how the local and the local market mainly. Every Friday, we host the We're Curious podcast where we look on how global markets have performed. But for Monday, as usual, we always talking about how the local market has performed, how the market has opened, and just having an overview of what's likely to happen in the coming week. My name is Felix Ochek and I'm your host. Joining me today, we have two special guests. As usual, we always know there are a few people who we've always been able to invite, and today we also have a new addition to the team. Maybe I'll just let them introduce themselves.
Hi everyone, my name is Davis Kadinji. I'm a financial analyst and I'm glad to be here with you today.
Hi everyone, my name is Leanne Jeroge. And yes, I'm glad to be here with you today.
The famous Leah. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, maybe we just push this through into how markets performed last week. Maybe just to start off with the financials before we get into, we take a deep dive into the markets. Let's probably start off with the financials. We had companies, we had Kenya Power, we had Kengen, we had Unga Group release the results, and also East African Portland Cement. Maybe just to share your thoughts, maybe start with you, Davis. What were your thoughts? Do you think that the companies reported probably some sound financial results, and probably which company were you really looking into?
I looked at all of them. I was impressed by Kengen's results. While there was a decrease in profits, of course, because of the tax advantage that they had last year, that wasn't in effect this time. Still, they're in a pretty good position. Cash and equivalents is around 10 billion. It's a solid company. I also looked at KPLC, a company which really intrigues me. So I actually also saw the full year 20 financials. There are a lot of concerns when I look at that company. For example, finance costs are extremely high. Like for the year ended full year 20, finance costs were around 12 billion. And then for this half year 21, finance costs thus far have been 8 billion. Now that is insanely high, because that means that for full year 21, it's likely to be above 15 billion. That will really cut into the company's any form of profits that they would have otherwise had. And then I also saw that something like what? The operating expenses literally ate up their gross profits 100%, which is really really bad. Of course, that's for full year 20. So that is of concern. For EAPC, the company of course is still struggling, hoping that their restructuring program will improve the company over time, but the prospects still seem dim. Unga Group, of course, struggling with the finance costs, the lack of payments by the government, which is all unfortunate, but still a solid company. People will always eat, of course. Among other things that they're struggling with is the increase of commodity prices. Of course, that was global because of supply chain disruptions, but I believe in the long term they will recover well. Yeah, those are my short insights into those companies.
This is very interesting. I believe a lot of us have always been wondering about Kenya Power as a company in terms of performance, because we know that the underlying for that company, the company has quite a very high potential. But one thing that we are always wondering about is most likely what's really going to really happen to the company in terms of future prospects, mostly to shareholders. Maybe if you just share your thoughts, do you think now that you've mentioned that the company is technically in a negative direction, do you think that shareholders would still be able to hold? What would be your opinion? Do you think we can be able to continue buying a little bit more on Kenya Power, or you'd advise a hold for the stock?
Well, I'm not our financial advisor. KPLC, that's a very interesting company. It's been at a net negative working capital position for the past 4 or 5 years. It's technically insolvent, actually. In fact, the reason it's surviving is because of a tax credit that it received from the government last year, which mitigated its loss from a potential loss of 7 billion to a loss of 900 million. Again, that's for the year ended full year 24, full year 21. While it's admirable what they've done, they've reduced expenses by around 4 billion, from 22 billion to 18 billion. While that is admirable, it's not exactly sustainable. So, they need to mitigate their finance costs. Their finance costs just continue increasing through each and every year, which is really, really bad, because all they're doing is that the refinancing the loans, and they're hoping to, it's in a sense kicking the can down the road. Eventually, it will implode on them. It will end quite negatively. So the future prospects seem bad. We're still waiting for the review with regard to tariffs. If there was something that would save the company, it would be that, if they were to increase electricity prices by 20%. Of course, there is political risk in that regard, given that the government is one that has a large say in the same, and that there's an election year next year. We're still not sure how that will pan out, but yeah, the future prospects seem really dim. No pun intended for KPLC.
I don't know. And then I'm just joined in by one of our usual attendees, the CEO of HISA. That's Eric Kasuma. Eric, maybe do you agree with Davis on Kenya Power? What would be your take on KPLC at this moment? Where do you think that the company's future is probably headed to in terms of shareholder returns?
Okay. That hi everyone. Speaking on Kenya Power, I think it's really a tough call. It's a tough call given where they are. Looking at their numbers, I saw what really caught my eye, I think, was the increase in finance costs. I think which was majorly due to the depreciation of the weakening of the Kenya shilling during the period. But from a shareholder's from a shareholder return perspective, personally, maybe in the long run, they are a monopoly in this market. But when you look at in terms of the returns, both from the numbers, bottom line, and the share price, it's not been impressive for me. When you try to compare that to KenGen, it's KenGen, on the other hand, has it's more of it's been good for shareholders, unlike Kenya Power, which is a monopoly. They haven't really performed as expected.
Yeah, actually, on that, you know, if you held Kenya Power from 2011 till now, you'd be down 92% ROI. Like, if you had a million there, you'd have 80,000 now. Not exactly the Whoa. Best returns.
So I believe that's something very huge. If you had Kenya Power 10 years ago,
yeah,
and right now you're probably, that's 92,000 in terms of losses. To those of you who bought Kenya Power, maybe you can be able to also just share your experiences. Have you been able to get returns? I know some people have probably been trading a little bit on the technical aspect, and I know there are a few guys here and there who've been able to make a little bit of returns. You can always be able to share your thoughts and views on the stock. But for now, I think we are agreeing that the future for Kenya Power is slightly dim. But then there's still a lot more that can be done by the company to ensure that shareholders and also generally the performance of the company takes a little bit of a positive end, and also shareholders get a little bit of returns as well. But also just one thing I would really want to mention on Kenya Power is that we saw the cash and cash equivalents for KPLC turn positive to about 1.7 billion from a negative of 6 billion in the first half for the financial year 2020. So I don't know what probably, Davis, do you think that would probably have, because I looked on the financials for Kenya Power and I think that was probably the only positive thing that the company really had. I don't know what are your thoughts on that. Do you think that is something to still probably affect the company in terms of profitability?
Well, it's a positive in that at least they have some cash on hand. Of course, that cash on hand will eventually end up in KenGen's hands and making these debt payments, etc. It's really hard to see the positives for the company. Of course, if you are a shareholder, the one thing you must bear in mind, the government can't actually let this company collapse, because if actually Kenya won't have power. Yeah, you know, and it would be quite a crazy process of if they actually allowed Kenya Power to declare bankruptcy, they'd have to create a new entity, move all of Kenya Power's assets to that new entity, convert the debt into equity, and then, you see, it's a very, very long process. So the better alternative is to always save the company. So in that regard, the government is likely to save the company. And that's why my bullish case for KPLC would be if there's a tariff review to increase electricity prices.
Okay.
Of course, these decisions would be more politically made rather than economically, unfortunately, because of the fact that the government owns over 50% of the company. But if you were to invest in that company, I'd really wait for that tariff review, which we are supposed to hear anytime soon. Yeah.
All right. I think we've had a little bit of overview on financials. Maybe if Eric wants to add anything on the financial bit before we move to something very interesting that happened last week. On Nation Media. Eric, you have anything on financials?
Not really. I think we've touched on the themes. Maybe we can jump into Nation Media, which is quite interesting.
All right, guys. And once again, we always put a little bit of a disclaimer. Remember that this is not advice to probably buy or sell a security. You, as an investor, you're always required to be able to do your in-depth analysis and research before you make any investment decision. So maybe just to move on to the next bit, Eric, to start off with you, I know you're in the media space and probably also just generally looking at the performance for Nation Media. Mm-hmm. Then the company comes up with this share buyback that they're now having. Generally, what's your take?
That's a good one. I have a very keen interest in the media space. I've been keenly watching that space and we're looking at Nation Media's business model. In terms of how, the question is, how do you price that sort of share price? Because when you look at Nation Media Group, when we had the bull run of, I think, 2015, I think at the time, the company was trading at over 300 or 350, thereabout, which I think was one of the all-time highs. At the time, the way the media space operates, their revenues were extremely high because, you know, it's when it comes to the print side of the business, it was basically a cash cow.
Yeah.
So for them to generate, let's say, over 10 billion revenues in a year, that was much easier because the corporates, the advertisers, it's much easier to, let's say, the example that I always give is that one corporate can spend as much as even up to $5 million on a daily basis on the print. But the economics of that business have changed completely due to the internet. Because I'll look at it this way. Why spend, let's say, 1 million Kenyan shillings on one page, on one full page advert? And then in terms of conversions and even getting the kind of awareness that I hold the same through the internet, it's the difference is so much, it's wider. So I think what happened is that in my own opinion, investors are pricing in the changes in the business model of the company. Then that led the share price, I think, falling. It's been trading at one of the all-time lows at the moment. And I think that corresponds with their revenues, which have been declining consistently over the years. I think when you speak to people in the industry about the share buyback, Nation themselves, I think the board and everyone, they think the stock is undervalued. I think that was the main reason that they issued. That was one of the main reasons that they issued a buyback, which I think it's basically the first company locally to do a buyback, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing that I thought was important. I think they also recently issued a bonus, if I'm not wrong, Felix.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, they
did issue a bonus at a rate of one for every 10.
Yeah, one to 10. So, in my own opinion, it's basically the management or the board thinks the company is undervalued. So probably this will be a good time to buy the stock. I think since they made the announcement, the share price within the two trading days was up by around nearly 20%.
Yes. And then even just right now, as we discuss on Market Open, Nation Media has already gone up about 9.9% in trading. So since the results, since the announcement, the corporate action was made, NMG was trading at 13 shillings and 80 cents. Now it's trading at 17 shillings and 70 cents as we are live right now. So I think we, I don't know what you guys think. Are we likely to continue expecting a little bit of a rally on NMG?
I think for me the question is, in as much as they do all this, what's going to change in the bottom line?
Yeah.
Are the revenues going to change? In as much as they say they have embraced the digital media, how is that going to affect the bottom line? Can that replace the kind of billions that they were able to get on print?
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, the Washington Post, which is a good comparison, was actually struggling before Jeff Bezos bought it. And then now they moved everything digital. And now the company is actually thriving. So we really need to see the impact of this digital shift. Actually, I think a miscalculation that NMG made a few years back is that they bought a bigger printer. And the reason that they gave was that they wanted to make higher quality newspapers, etc. Which was a miscalculation in that they weren't looking toward the future of the industry, which of course was the internet. As we sit here, I don't think many of us have read a newspaper in a while, unless it's maybe a digital copy. So it's a good thing that they've moved online, and we just hope to see the effects of that. Of course, the management appears bullish with regard to the share buyback program. Of course, they haven't said at what price, but if they're bullish with regard to the new strategy moving online, possibly shareholders should be too, but we should wait for the financials to see the impact that it's had thus far.
I think one more comment would be on, I think what the power of the internet offers the legacy media houses is basically distribution. And when it comes to distribution, unless you are able, if you want to, let's say, put a paywall on your website or the digital platform, what drives that, what drives people to pay for that will be basically content. So I think if Nation can beef up the content and make generally generate exclusive content that you can't find anywhere, maybe in the long run, people will embrace it.
Yeah. All right. So I think those are very important aspects. So we've been having a little bit of a dive on companies, and maybe just right now we move a little bit further and just have a little an overview of how the markets performed. Last week we saw the indices probably take a little bit of a, they cooled off from the recent rally. We saw the NSE All Share Index coming down by just a slight 0.1%. That's week on week, to close the week at 165.39 basis points. We saw at least, because generally whatever we've been seeing for a better part of the month was that whenever the NSE All Share Index and the NSE 25 Share Index edged up, we saw the NSE 20 lose. But now for the first time this week, we actually seen the NSE 20 edge up and move just by quite a little bit of a margin, about 1.4% in terms of trading. Maybe just to start off with that before we move to the 25 Share Index, which also shed about 0.4%. What are your takes on the index performance?
Okay, so I believe I saw that data. The foreigners especially took a net selling position, if I'm not wrong. And a lot are moving away from, especially financial counters. Some are selling off EABL, maybe taking in the gains from the recent rally. So since it's March, of course, a lot of banks will be giving their financial results. So it's almost as if especially foreign investors are taking a wait and see approach, hence the net selling position, especially on counters such as KCB and Equity. so as to see how the financials will pan out. As we I believe we discussed once before, around 54% of the total loan book in Kenya was actually restructured in light of COVID happening and the like. Now, a lot of those loans will end up being non-performing loans, unfortunately, even though the economy has opened up, etc. So we really need to see how non-performing loans will perform on a case-by-case basis, like depending on the different banks. I personally expected Equity to be really hit, considering that a lot of their loan portfolio is comprised of SMEs, but they actually weren't. They're actually performing okay. But going forward, I'm really looking to see the impact of non-performing loans on each of these banks. You know, like if you look at it, of course, there are two ways to analyze a company, either top-down or bottom-up. You know, top-down is when you look at the economy and then now you start working your way down. Bottom-up is when you look at the individual company and then work your way up, in a sense. If I look at it top-down, our economy faces a myriad of factors, among them being the fact that in light of our reducing revenues and our interest expenses on our debt, the government is increasing taxes far and wide. So the effect of this is that companies are either retrenching or, they're retrenching and their bottom lines are getting hurt. Now, this will affect how they service their loans, which will, of course, affect banks. So you see, it's like a domino effect of sorts, which will trickle all the way down. So hoping that things improve, but I believe there's a wait-and-see approach being taken on by investors at this time, especially toward banks. But I believe that banks, on their part, adequately provisioned. Like, their loan loss provisions were adequate early on, and so we long to see the impact of that and the effects on the market.
Okay, speaking of banks, most of them, I think, most of the big banks have already issued a profit warning that their full year for 2020 results would be below 25%. I think in the coming week, from this week and the other week, a lot of these banks will be releasing their earnings for that particular period. And I think given that they've already issued a profit warning, so it's expected that the numbers won't be good. But I think banks are resilient, specifically for economy, the banks are resilient. Looking at the top, the tier one, tier two banks, the challenge I think is on the tier three banks. Most of them aren't really listed, so but I think in the long run, I see the banks overcoming the pandemic, and of course they'll be at the core of the performance, the bounce back of the economy.
All right. I think that's very interesting. Maybe Davis, which banks are you looking for? Which banks are you generally having a look at? Since we already know, personally for me, I'm really looking on how KCB will perform, considering there's been a little less activity in terms of corporate actions for KCB. We've seen Equity Bank do a little bit of activity here and there to excite shareholders, including the acquisitions in DRC and also the rebranding and everything else, and also just having a little bit of a keeping investors up to date with a few footprints here and there. I'm hoping that Equity Bank will actually be able to pay dividends to investors. Maybe I don't know what banks are you guys looking at, but my main interest would really be on how KCB is going to perform.
Well, a lot of banks there might be a dividend drought in a sense, and okay, KCB might be forced to actually give a dividend on the basis that the government is one of the largest shareholders there. But don't quote me. Anyway, I like Equity's digitization strategy. I believe that is a really good way going forward. The expansion into DRC is a good play, albeit they have political risk, of course, because Congo is really unstable. But going forward, the prospects seem bright. The banks I'm looking at, just similar to you, KCB, Equity, and Stanchart as a dividend play, because that one tends to give really good dividends, I believe. Though this time around, of course, we're expecting a drought. I actually foresee possibly more banks giving out bonus issues of sorts to compensate, such that they have adequate liquidity on hand for anything, really. Yeah.
if you're looking on bonus, it would also be very interesting to remember that NCBA actually issued a bonus last year. It would be a challenge to see if the bank would be able to continue giving out, say, another bonus to investors, considering it's not the first time that NCBA as a bank brings in a bonus in terms of dividend. They did this previously when the bank was still NIC before the merger with CBA. But it would be very interesting just to see how the company would also react when the results come trickling in. Another thing is that CoopBank had also issued a profit warning, a shareholder statement, so to say. So maybe that's another company that would be interesting to just look into. Equity Bank has, there's something very interesting about Congo that I was trying to look at about the lending rates in Congo, where in 2010, the lending rates in Congo were as high as 56%. Wow. And in 2019, the rates were at about 26%. Last year in 2020, I know there was data about the rates being marked at about 18%. I think if Equity Bank was to probably put in a lot more funds on the fixed income segment in DRC, generally by just performing the lending business, I think that would be something that would be very interesting to see how that performs. That is also just in spite of the instability that we have in the DRC. Let's really hope that we have a little bit of more stability with a more formal government and more active administration now in place. We hope that things will be able to turn in positive. Also, just one thing as we move into the last segment of our session. Generally looking on the fixed income segment, there is data from KNBS that actually showed that the economy slid into a recession in third quarter 2020. The GDP contracted about 1.1%. What are your thoughts? Do you think we are still in the same situation, or we probably pulled out of that situation? I know most of the time we saw general analysis, we didn't have the data from KNBS, but now it's here, indicating that the GDP actually contracted. And also just to push in onto that, we are seeing the government as well, through the central bank, open another TAPSIL for bond. We are seeing that was last week. I think the bond closed in last week. And I'm seeing the government raised about 7.16 billion. This is from the bonds that we had mentioned on Monday. I believe those of you who were in last week on Monday, we spoke about this bond, the bonds that were open, the FXD1, the fixed rate bond 2013, the 15-year bond, and also the fixed rate bond, the 2012, the 20-year bond. I don't know, what are your thoughts? Do you think we, just as usual, as we discuss on the few things about the economy, are we likely to see the government continue raising more funds through the fixed income segment? And just generally, how viable is it, considering that we are constantly seeing we are seeing data that indicates that we slid into recession sometime back then? And also, just finally, for the all of you who are in, also just to mention a few things that you're likely to see. Which sectors are you probably having a positive outlook on the government? I know that we had a little bit of analysis done earlier on in the year by Kwame Owino, that's from iCare, who mentioned a little bit of his optimism in the agricultural sector, considering that our economy is largely supported by agriculture. But I would really want to see just, what are your growth prospects? The main reason why we're actually discussing about this, for those of you who are wondering, because even the companies that are listed on the NSE, they have a little bit of support that comes in from the operations and how the economy performs at large. And finally, where is our inflation headed? I know those are a few more things that I've touched on four things that maybe I would want someone to just pick on and just touch on it randomly. Maybe we start with Eric.
Okay. Okay. Looking at the most recent data from the CBK, shows that deposit rates, I think, have dropped by around 6.3 as of last year, December, from around 7.1 in December 2019. Just reading comments from the CEO of Kenya Bankers, he said that the decrease shows the decrease in the rate shows a decreased appetite for banks to mobilize funding going onward, and demand for loans is not high. So my thinking is that still there's demand for government paper, and we are likely to see that going forward. Maybe until when the economy is much more stable, that's when things might change.
Do you think the inflation is likely to continue? Do you think we're likely to have a little bit? What's your outlook in terms of inflation? Do you think we're likely to see inflation ease, or we're likely to see it rise a bit over time?
What was the February inflation rate?
5.8%.
That was as of last week, right?
Yes, if I'm not wrong.
Compared to the previous month?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
What we know is that it was on a positive rise.
Okay.
So I think it would be interesting to see. Maybe another thing that our central bank can actually start putting on is to, and I saw this used to be done some time back by KNBS, but we need to probably have more of like a Kenya shilling index because I know what we really have is to track it against the USD, but if we can try just having a normal Kenya shilling index in terms of the basket performance, we're seeing that really controlling a little bit of some decisions in Japan. We have the Japanese yen, the green basket. We also have the US dollar index for the green basket. I think that's one thing that we can always be able to just, maybe CBK might be having that probably in their pipeline. I know that's something that will be very interesting to look into. Maybe just turning to Davis before we conclude the session.
Okay, you've asked many questions. So I'll try answer what I remember. Of course, with regard to inflation, the entire world is facing some form of inflation, whether it be asset price inflation or inflation as measured by the consumer price index, that's CPI. So because of the supply chain shocks that were experienced throughout the world, with regard to the fact that supply slowed down or was forced to slow down because demand was expected to go down, and that's what happened. And then now demand is picking up, of course, for commodities. Demand is picking up faster than supply is able to go online, in a sense. And so that's why we're experiencing supply shocks with regard to, for example, unga, maize prices going up, the prices of raw materials going up and affecting its bottom line, etc. So inflation is likely to go up. Now for Kenya, long term I see our inflation going up a bit significantly. The reason being, again, because our revenues are seemingly stagnating and have been impacted especially by COVID and the like. And so the government, in a bid to increase revenues, increasing taxes, which is affecting bottom lines for companies and hurting individuals, etc., which will only serve to reduce revenues rather than actually increase it. So it's like it negates the attempts that they actually, or the things that they're trying to do. In the long run, if it gets to a point, like I believe last year, this coming year, 1 trillion will go towards debt repayments. That's a third of our budget, if I'm not mistaken.
That's beginning July, right?
Yes. Mm. And this amount just keeps on going up. You have to realize, and if you look at data by the CBK very clearly, a lot of the loans that we are taking up isn't actually going towards development expenditure, but rather it's going toward recurrent expenditure and debt repayment. So it's like taking an mshwari loan to pay an Atala loan. You get, of course, this is unsustainable. Eventually, the house of cards will come tumbling down, in a sense, and then you add corruption into the mix. Now, this is May, because as we look a bit long term, but again, it's always good to take an economist's not point of view, the pinch of salt, because I mean, how many rich economists do you know? Yeah, so now, in the long run, the government may actually be forced to print money to pay local debt. Remember, our local debt is Kenya shilling denominated, foreign debt is USD. Now, if our revenues are being strained and a lot of it is going toward recurrent expenditure and debt repayment, at one point or another, rather than declare a default, the government might be forced to print. Again, this is not a guarantee. However, this is among the things that we look into as risks, you know, as investors. Okay. This, of course, would drive inflation way up, because unlike in the US, whereby they can just print money, and a lot of this money is going towards assets, since this is something called the Cantillon effect. So effectively, when a nation goes to get national resources, for example gold, they go and mine gold, yeah, that gold will reach those closest to the king, you get. And so in that way, when the Fed prints money, a lot of this money goes towards those who have assets, those who are holding bonds. And in fact, these bonds that they're holding are bought by the Fed in premiums, hence driving bond prices down, even though bond prices have actually started to go up as people are dumping them recently, which is actually a positive, because if inflation hits the US now, inflation as measured by the CPI, this inflation will serve to reduce Kenya's dollar denominated debt, which is a very good thing. But so, I've said many things that are maybe confused. But so now, our debt, our inflation is likely to go up in the long run, because of this supply chain shocks, because of the risk that the government may actually be forced to print money to pay local debt, which again, unlike the US, won't go towards assets. Rather, it will literally reach the economy, because this money will go towards banks, etc., who will lend it out, and like that, which will trickle down to the rest of the economy. So those are the negatives that we may face, and we prepare accordingly. You know, you buy gold as a hedge with regard to all these things, or cryptocurrency assets as a hedge against the loss of, or the depreciation of the dollar, because of all the printing that's going on, etc. So you, looking at it at a global perspective and local, there are a lot of things to be on the lookout for, in a sense.
My two cents on that, I think, looking at last week's Feb figures from KNBS, I think that was, we hit nearly a one. The inflation rate is almost at a 1 year high, an 11 month high, 5.78% compared to almost, it's actually nearly a 1 year high. I think the question is, how do you protect your money against such inflation? Should you save in USD? Should you buy crypto? Should you buy government paper? How do you protect your money to make sure you are above the inflation rate? And another question should be, I think, when CBK releases the bi-monthly MPC statements, usually they always target the inflation to be within, they have their own target range. So I don't know if the current inflation is within the government's target range.
Yes, I believe it should be, if I'm not wrong. And with regard to where you should invest your money, invest your money, first of all, in tangible assets.
Okay.
So a good place to be would be, for example, in gold. Gold tends to act as a hedge, you get. So as inflation goes up, the price of gold will just continue going up. So if you hold your assets in gold, you're well hedged. Okay. Also in cryptocurrencies, you need to understand, now you need to look at it from a global perspective. When money is printed, for example, as you've seen in the Fed, etc., there's more money chasing fewer goods. Sindio? So on relative terms, assets and commodity prices, actually that's among the things that's making commodity prices going up, other than the supply chain shocks. The prices of these goods will go up, because a lot of printing is happening. In fact, I believe the Senate yesterday passed legislation that's, I'm not sure if it's the Senate or the, oh, it's the House, sorry. The House passed legislation that allowed the $1.9 trillion by the Biden administration to go through. It's going to the Senate, and so most likely the $1.9 trillion will actually reach the economy. Now, with the economy opening up, we don't know if that will lead to direct inflation rather than assets inflation.
Okay.
But so assets like Bitcoin, assets like gold, etc., will go up. Now avoid treasuries. Okay, so when you're investing, you need to look at two things. You need to look at real returns and nominal returns. Nominal returns are the returns you'll receive as advertised, in a sense. So for example, if you're investing in a 10-year bond, it's offering you 12%. Your nominal return rate is that 12%. Your real return is the return after inflation. Okay, so if inflation is 20%, your real return is negative 8%. That's why you avoid treasury bills and bonds, because they get badly affected by inflation. Actually, Warren Buffett recently in his letter, he actually said that the holders of bonds will be badly affected going forward, and have been badly affected even in the past. In fact, a good place to be is with regard to the stock market is with a particular focus on stocks that have tangible assets.
Yeah.
You get, and for the reason being is that, let's say a company like Unga, if inflation hits, Unga will just increase its prices. So it's like acting as a hedge, you get. So then they're not at really being affected. You're the one who's being affected because you're feeling the price increments, but them, they're almost remaining the same because the rates or the prices of their goods and services adjust to inflation. So that's a good place to be with regard to if you want to focus on the stock market.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. I think maybe that's it when we're looking onto markets. And just a little bit to look onto the final thing about a few recommendations that we're seeing various investment banks give out this week. And just starting off, we're seeing the last time we had a discussion, we saw Fide Investment Bank maintain a recommendation, buy recommendation for Kenya Re, and right now the company is still maintaining a hold recommendation for Kenya Re. At the same time, we're seeing Ganges Capital this week issue a buy recommendation, a long-term buy recommendation on East African Breweries Limited. Those are a few counters that we can also just be able to have a little bit of a look on next week as we have another podcast session on Monday. Today, as markets have opened, just to give you a little bit of an overview how markets have opened today, still just as we mentioned, NMG is still on top of the gainers list. NMG has moved about 58,500 shares at market open, still up 9.94%. Following closely is Kenya Insurance Company, which is on the list for one of the investment banks that we mentioned earlier on, 8.43%. And also just to mention, we're seeing a little bit of some activity on Diamond Trust Bank, gaining up just a little bit high of 1%. Losers side, it's interesting to note that Cooperative Bank, Scan Group, a major company that we've been looking on, Scan Group is down 1.7% and Cooperative Bank about 1.15%. Looking a little bit on also how the data is on the market, just to give you an overview of Nation Media Group. Nation Media Group, the demand is still 233,900 shares, total demand. Top demand being at 1770, that's 17 shillings and 70 cents per share. There is no supply on Nation Media Group. On Diamond Trust Bank, we are looking at a demand of 58,700. This is at 10:15 a.m. We're seeing a total demand of 58,700 and a supply of only 12,000. Looking on Scan Group, we are having a demand of 168,000 and a supply and a supply of about 129,700. The supply is high at 6 shillings, where we have about 102,200 in supply. And also just to look into Cooperative Bank, which we've also had a look at, Coop Bank demand still high at about 247,000 and supply just 16,400. These are interesting counters. They've opened the market with a little bit of activity. It will be interesting to see how they perform at the end of the week. So we'll also be able to have a little bit of a look onto this next week. If you're wondering where we're getting this data, we're getting this data from HISA. HISA app, which you can also be able to download on your Android or iOS phone and just have a little bit of a look, or your Apple phone, just have a look at HISA app and just also continue. This podcast will be uploaded on HISA. Have a lovely week.
Thank you.
Bye.